Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
It's a new year and a new Q&A session. I know I've said it before, but these are always my favourite podcasts, as there are always so many great and varied questions. And I love having the opportunity to give a prize away at the end, thanks to our friends at The Plant Runner. So here we go with question number one for Keith. This one is from Shara. All of my summer squash veggies, including pumpkin and zucchini, keep rotting at the flower bud on the new fruit and dying. I can't find any pests in the rotting veggies, which makes me think it's a lack of calcium in the soil causing this. What can I do to save these plants, or is it too late?
Absolutely not too late, because we will have a long, long, warm summer. So there'll be plenty of time for these things to recover. When you say you think it's a lack of calcium, okay, what calcium can cause on these sorts of plants is what is called blossom end rot, and that is a deficiency in calcium. However, I don't think that that's the problem. I really don't. But if it is, and you're going to be the ones to best assess that, then I would suggest you try adding calcium by using dolomite lime, which is adding both calcium and magnesium. So you're controlling, or you're supplying two good methods there of ensuring that they've got those elements available to them. So I believe that the problem is that the plants are not being fertilised. Mm. All right. So I think that you're having your female plants opening, and there is not enough male flowers around, or not enough bees in the area that are coming to pollinate those plants. So I had a little look at my big zucchini at our place this morning, and I noticed that there are enormous amounts of leaves that are hiding a lot of the flowers that are down the bottom. So I've got both male and female flowers, and we've had a few zucchinis, but now they are starting to drop off a little way that you're describing. So what I'm doing is I'm going to be removing some of the big leaves so that the bees, when they're flying past, they're attracted to yellow most of all. They will come down and fix that. So just to sort of make things a little bit simpler for you, I would suggest that you do the pollination yourself. Mm. So work out the female, which will have the bulbous ovary behind the back of the flower or back of the petals, and the male plant will be a long, thin thin stem with the petal at the top. Remove the actual petals off to expose the stigma with the pollen on it, and dip that onto the female part of the plant, and you've done the pollination for them.
Wow.
And that's going to be the best way that I think that you're going to get these plants up and going.
Fantastic. All right. Gosh, good luck, Shara, doing that pollination. Send us some photos.
It's a bit of fun.
Yeah, a bit of fun, exactly. Okay, question number two is from Marina. I have two medium-sized conifers in my garden with just bare soil underneath. I would like to give the area a bit more life and was wondering what the best ground cover would be for under conifer trees.
Okay, so underneath the conifer tree, the soil is going to be a little bit on the acidic side. Okay, so we need to be thinking about the sorts of plants that will tolerate those conditions. It's going to be dry and it's going to be shade. So we're going to start with I'm going to give you a range of native plants. I'm going to give you a range then of tufting plants, and then I'm going to give you a range of exotic plants. So depending on what sort of, colours and themes you want to crack up there underneath that. So in the native range, there is a whole range of prostrate varieties of acacias, and there's one called Provisima, which is a magnificent prostrate wattle. There's another one called Acacia baileyana prostratus, and that's also a beautiful looking one. There is a prostrate coria, which the variety would be Alba, which is the white flowering coria. And then there's also Myoporum parvifolium, which is the creeping boobiella. And that's got masses of little white flowers, and it becomes a beautiful deep green carpet underneath.
Oh, lovely.
And what you're creating then is a micro environment, because once they've established, they will help to retain the moisture underneath those leaves.
Yes.
Okay.
Multi-faceted. Faceted, yes.
So in the tufted plant range, there are things like mondo grass. There's a dwarf variety of mondo grass, then there's a taller variety, so have a look at those. And then there's also a plant called liriope, liriope muscarii, and there's a white form, there is a pink form, and there is a blue form. So a mixture of those underneath the conifers would look absolutely sensational. And then, you could put down things like creeping thymes.
Yes.
You could put down some sedums, which would work beautifully on there. There's a plant called Lamium, which is a lovely little leafed plant with multi colours on the leaves. Of course, lamb's ears.
Oh, yes.
Makes a fabulous plant underneath.
Variation in the greens, yes.
And then there's a native Australian plant called Dichondra, which is the kidney weed. And there's a green, and then there is a silver form of that, which would work fantastic. And then if you want to go for something a little bit taller, there is a plant called Iberis sempervirens, which is otherwise known as candy tuft. And then you've got catmints you could put down there. So something like Walker's Low would be a good one, catmint Walker's Low. Hellebores would work in there once they've established. And also there's another plant that doesn't get a very good rap, but it makes a fabulous ground cover, and that's a plant called Cotaneaster horizontalis, which has got deep, small, dark, glossy green leaves and little berries of red on top of that.
Pretty.
So it can look really, really good. So there's a whole heap of plants there for you.
That is a magnificent variety. Great choices there. So I think that Marina... we'll have some good decisions to make now, because there's some great choices. Thank you for that one. Now from Phoebe, how do we stop thrip in the office due to all the plants?
Okay.
And that's a very common problem in offices.
It is. And, the thrips are coming in on the air. They're coming in on the clothes you're wearing when they're out there. So they're into that environment inside, and if you've got lots of indoor plants, you've got lots of places for those horrible little thrips to survive. So I would suggest you use Eco-Neem, just 12.5 mL into 5 litres into a spray, and spray the top, spray underneath the leaves, and do that on a weekly basis. The Eco-Neem will become somewhat systemic, so it'll be absorbed by the plants, and it'll then deter anything that tries to suck or chew or eat those indoor plants. So there's your safest, best method of control.
Fantastic. That good old Eco-Neem works so well with so many things. Okay, thanks for that, Phoebe. The next question is from Yen. What are your tips for growing veggies in pots, things like tomatoes, cucumbers, strawberries and zucchinis? I'm experimenting with fabric bags and black plastic pots and finding that they're easily becoming hydrophobic, especially with this recent heatwave in Melbourne.
Yeah, and the problem here is potting mixes, black pots and potting mixes. The reason that they use black pots in the nursery industry to grow plants in is because they absorb the heat. And, of course, in a nursery situation, they're being constantly watered. They might be being watered 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day in the heat, so they're getting plenty of moisture. Now, if you're going to be growing in pots or even in fabric bags, I would suggest that you look at a totally different product to potting mix. And we're going to be having a couple of our guests coming up shortly to explain their particular product. Now, it is called, if you Google Easy Ass Organics, you will see their magnificent potting medium. And it's not bark, it's a whole range of different things, and I'll tell you what some of those things are. But as I said, the main problem you've got with bark is you're getting so much water going through because it's such an open product. And you've got,
what are you saying bark for?
Well, potting mix is made primarily of bark.
Right,
pine bark.
Okay.
And it's the water just washes straight through.
Right.
So you've got to be keeping the moisture up to it.
Okay.
So And that's also very important when you the plants that you're looking to grow here. We're talking about things like tomatoes, cucumbers and zucchinis, and these plants are incredibly heavy feeders. Right. Now, the only source of food in potting mixes is those little balls, the little yellow balls or little blue balls, whatever they are, which are slow-release fertilisers, and they're chemicals. So by turning to something like a product from Easy Ass Organics, what you're actually having in there is a product that contains biochar, basalt rock dust, not Manish's beautiful product, but basalt rock dust, worm castings, compost, fish meal, kelp, insect frass, lime, gypsum, sphagnum peat moss, wood fiber, and sulfates.
All good
so
things.
So all those things there will provide the best possible medium for your plants, which are heavy feeders, to be growing in. Now, this product is about $50 for a bag, so it's not cheap, but the thing about it is it will outlast potting mixes. So you can keep on using it, and they also have another product, which is a rejuvenator, and you simply put that on the top after each growing season, and that will rejuvenate that soil.
So those potting, so it doesn't need to be changed over every year,
you don't
2 years.
Have to, or even 2 or 3 years. You know, you grow this stuff and you're going to get absolute value for money, and you're going to get the best possible growth from those plants.
Fantastic.
And you won't be watering anywhere near as often.
Okay. And as far as the black plastic pots are concerned, what about an alternative to a black plastic pot?
Okay, so
that is still cheap.
Right.
Not
expensive. No, you can still use black plastic pots. But what I would suggest you do is you cram them together. And then you put a wall around them, and that wall could be something as simple and as cheap as going down to a garden supplies and getting a bale of straw.
Oh, okay.
And then just take it out, and they break up into biscuits. So get straw hay, not grass hay.
Yep.
Straw hay, break it into biscuits, and just plonk it around the sides of the pots. Give it a water so it doesn't blow around.
So and
it'll provide a beautiful environment for those plants to be in the black pots to be working with.
So that wall is actually absorbing the water and maintaining.
And holding it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right. Okay, okay, fantastic. That's great advice. And we're looking forward to those talking to the Easy As Organics guys very soon. Okay, second question from Yen. What is the best organic treatment for aphids? I have what I thought was a fine net over my lettuce, but they have not just got in, they have mass produced.
A fine net. Now, I've got fine nets over all my plants at home, and it's a 2 mil micron net, and I will still get bugs climbing through that and getting in. And when you get a couple going in, they produce thousands of others. So I'm going to make a bigger suggestion here than going for Eco Neem and Eco Oil. I'm going to suggest for a quick, effective knockdown that you go for a pyrethrum spray. So a pyrethrum spray is an instant knockdown, and the actual pyrethrum is from a plant, which is a daisy-like plant, and the plants are actually grown in on the north coast of Tasmania. There's whole farms of the pyrethrum daisies down there, which is where it comes from. Now, it's a little bit expensive, but it is incredibly effective, and you only need to hit them once and you'll break that cycle. The other thing you could try would be a Yates product called Maverick, which is also quite a good product, or Eco Neem, but you've got to do the Eco Neem on a weekly basis so that it becomes systemic, so that whatever chews and sucks it will die.
Okay. So while we're on the question of this terrible topic,
yes.
I have a problem.
I've seen your problem.
Yes, I have what I think are definitely white aphids doing their best to suck the life out of many plants in my garden, especially my hydrangeas.
Yep.
Now, I have been spraying them with a mix of Eco Neem, Eco Oil and water, as per your suggestion, on a weekly basis, but they don't seem deterred by this at all. And I've got to tell you more, because they're going from one hydrangea to the next to the next. They started in the irises, actually, and went from them to the hydrangeas. So I'm also so frustrated with them that when I can, I'm getting my hose and spraying them as well in the morning or in the evening, and then doing my weekly Eco Neem, Eco Oil spray. Yep. But they just keep coming back.
Okay,
so I'm worried everything's going to be dead soon, Keith.
Yeah. So get onto the pyrethrum.
Okay.
and or have a look at the Yates Maverick.
Okay.
All right. So that'll be a quick knockdown effect.
Okay. So do that. Is that a weekly thing?
I do it for you know, I probably do it on a weekly basis.
Oh, wow.
Maybe for about 2 or 3 weeks, and you'll find you'll knock them. Oh. But you're going to have to get a spray that you can actually turn the nozzle so that it sprays up, because a lot of these little mongrels are going to be on the underside of the leaves.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to spray them as well.
They tuck them inside, like with the iris leaves, they tuck them in where you just can't get to them, where they're protected.
Yep. So get some pyrethrum or get some Yates Maverick. Okay. I try the pyrethrum first.
Okay, thank you very much. I will. Okay, moving on to Trudy now. Trudy says, my lavender is looking brown and tired. It's very woody and leggy and is bending over. Can I prune and rescue it, or am I better to cut my losses and pull it out?
Okay. Trudy, how long have you had it? We don't know. But I'm guessing that if it's starting to get long and leggy and a bit tired and woody, it's time to knock it on the head and replace it.
Cut your losses.
Cut your losses. Look, give it in probably late summer, early autumn, you could cut it back and just see what sort of rejuvenation you get. But lavenders are not a long-lived shrub. You know, they're a perennial, and if you get 4 or 5 years out of them, you're doing really, really well.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
Because I've got some out there that are so old.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a matter of not making sure you don't go back too far, because if you get back to the wood, you
that's
won't.
That's it. The older wood, that's it. You're starting. You've asked for problems. Now, it's also dependent upon what variety. And the only way to find out what variety is to look at the leaf. Now, if the leaf has got a series of little knobs all the way around it, so little dentates around it, that will be a French lavender, and that's a big bushy plant. So you know that you can't cut that back too deep. But if the leaf is smooth, that will be an English lavender, so something like angustifolia. But I'd have a little think about replacing those, and maybe look for some great varieties like Hidcote is a small, beautiful, compact form that remains tight, so it doesn't get big and leggy, and that gets to about 40 to 45 centimetres round. There's one called Munstead, and then there's an Italian variety called Stoshis, which has got beautiful little pineapple-type flowers on the top. They've got little pineapple heads, they look like. Mm. And then there's another great variety if you can get it, and that's called Grosso, which has probably got the most intense flavour. You can actually use it for flavouring, but it has a magnificent fragrance. And a beautiful colour. So Grosso is a ripper one to have a look at. That or Hidcote would be my two goers on that one.
Okay. Good luck, Trudy, with your pruning. The next question is from Lisa. The last question is from Lisa. Your podcasts have reignited my love of gardening. Thank you. I had to read that bit because that was very lovely. Thank you very much, Lisa. I'm making an open compost heap. I have a lot of organic matter, mainly sheep and alpaca manure, hay and garden waste. Is it a good idea to add all the ashes and coals from the fire pit, and should I cover the whole thing with something like hessian to increase the temperature?
Okay, so covering anything with a compost heap is not going to increase the temperature. The temperature doesn't come from being covered. It comes from the microbial activity that should be in that compost. Now, all the things that you've just mentioned there are actually carbon components. And what we need to be adding to your compost is a nitrogen component. So you need to be adding green matter. So green cuttings from the lawn is a great way of adding nitrogen to that compost heap. Or shredded leaves and things, vegetable scraps are also a carbon component. Nitrogen component.
Yeah.
I'm getting a bit confused there. Yeah. Nitrogen component. So you need to be putting lots more green matter on top of those other drier matters, and that will increase the microbial activity. Because the reason your compost heap is not getting hot is because you're not providing the food for the microbes. The microbes feed on nitrogen in order to break down the carbon component. And the more that you can of that green matter that you can add, up to, say, you know, 3 parts to 1, your compost heap will get incredibly hot, and then it will take off. Now, if you can't keep up with the green material, then you need to add nitrogen in another form. And the easiest and cheapest way of doing that is by adding blood and bone. So sprinkle blood and bone over the top of your compost heap, or Rooster Booster, which is a new trod product. It's about $17-$18 for a big bag. Very, very economical. So start using the nitrogen components onto your heap, and I guarantee you, you'll get hot compost because you'll be getting in the better microbes that really chew through that material and turn it into compost really quickly.
And that'd be fantastic for the garden then.
Absolutely.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, so that completes the questions for this Q&A session. Thank you yet again to everyone for sending in their questions. Please keep them coming either by DM to our Muddy Boots Instagram page or by emailing gardengirl@aussiemail.com.au. And please also let us know if there are any specific topics that you'd like us to discuss as a main podcast. We would love to hear your suggestions. And now for this month's Q&A prize winner. And the prize this week or this month goes to Yen for her question regarding growing vegetables in pots. Congratulations, Yen. We will be in contact with you shortly. Thanks again, as always, to the team at The Plant Runner for supplying the fabulous monthly Q&A prize. And don't forget to visit theplantrunner.com. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au. And happy gardening.